Welcome to the G&JB Show, episode number 51. Jack Bowen, how are you, mate?
I'm good, White Axe. How are you?
Good. You've gone there again.
Not bad. Excellent. Have to. Yeah, yeah.
Mate, do you want to introduce the legend?
Well, we've got a very special guest here. We've got Brisbane royalty, Australian royalty, Jeffrey Horn.
Acacia Ridge royalty.
Jeez, you've gone that far. Yeah, we got Jeff Horn on today. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, guys.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I can't complain.
Day off poker?
No.
No? He loves it.
No, it's just a random day that you asked me to come on the podcast, and I'm actually playing poker tonight, so.
Mate, I reckon you play a bit more than that.
Sometimes. Sometimes I go through a week of it. I play a whole week in tournaments for check raise and things like that. Yeah. But other than that, I'm just once a week normally.
Have you played any like celebrity poker games?
I have, but it was a very like fast game, like where they just play really quick and I didn't do any good. I think I came second or third, which was lucky enough to even come that far.
Yeah, right.
I think Alex Linsky won that.
You love it though?
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good
game. Good. Excellent. Mental game.
Mate, so our podcast, the G&JB Show, we call it Going Deep. Mate, we want to know about you, like even stories that people don't know about you. Where were you... You're born, you're a local boy, and where did you start your schooling days and that sort of stuff?
Yep. There's not too much that people probably don't know about me, to be honest.
True, it's been sold once or twice, hasn't it?
Yeah. But I was born in Brisbane. I couldn't tell you what hospital. I should be able to know that. Maybe the Mater? I'm not sure.
Having we'll a say guess. That.
Logan for me.
I am guessing. And I grew up in Pilara. Well, I first lived in Inala for like about 6 months, I think. And then I think when I was one, we moved to Pilara. And that's where I lived for 20 something years, where I finally bought my own house in Acacia Ridge.
Nice. Mate, where did you go to primary school then?
A Lady of Fatima, Acacia Ridge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Up the road from Watson Road School, State School.
And then?
That's right near the YMCA.
Jack runs a program at the YMCA there. You know the YMCA? Jack runs a boxing program out there.
Nice. So. Yeah, very good.
All the rat bags. It's good there. I like Acacia Ridge, but...
Yeah, it's good. So, mate, and then... So, were you a sporty kid in primary school?
Yeah, I was always sporty. I was always trying to be the best at whatever it was in sport. Normally, it was like athletics or soccer, but that didn't work out, did it?
Who'd you play for, soccer?
I played at Acacia Ridge, Acacia Ridge Soccer Club, for quite some time. And then I went to the Brisbane Lions.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Brisbane Lions or Queensland Lions, I think they were called.
Yeah.
Queensland Lions. Played for them for a while and then tried out for, I think, Rochdale Rovers, but then didn't really make the top side for there.
Was this more getting into high school?
Yeah, that's later. That was like 17, 18.
Oh, you played that far, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
When I gave soccer up, that's when I went to boxing.
Mate, it's legendary, the story that you went to watch the local amateur boxing titles at the Mansfield Tavern. Is it right?
Yeah.
It just started from there?
You were saying what year that was. I can't remember what year it was. 2005?
I think you had like Toddy Kidd, Jared Fletcher, those sort of guys around still then. You ended up fighting Toddy a couple of times.
Yes. So I'm pretty sure that was around 2005. And I started... Actually, it was even earlier than that. I can't remember.
Anyway.
It's all irrelevant.
Yeah.
But, mate, why did you go down? Did you just think, oh, this is on, let's go and have a look? Or were you thinking, I want to get into this?
I was thinking I wanted to get into it because that's when soccer, I hadn't made any big teams or anything. I was like, oh, I thought I was going to be a professional soccer player when I grew up, but it's obviously not going to happen. I'm going to have to find something else. And I was like, why not have a look at boxing? And, my dad was like, well, I'll take you to the national titles that are happening. They're just up the road, so we'll go watch it.
And you pretty much had a look and said, I can beat these guys.
as every Joe Blow that doesn't box thinks when they watch a fighting, yes. It's exactly what I thought. I was like, I could beat these guys.
And you eventually did.
Yeah.
You eventually did.
With a lot of hard work and dedication, yes, I did. But if you were to stick me in that ring with any of those guys at that point in time where I thought I could probably beat them, there was no chance in hell.
Can you remember anyone you were watching that you went, I can beat him? Or was it like just the event you were like, I can do this? Like,
Look, every time I watched a fighter, I would probably think I could beat them. Like with what I knew, I was like, in the confidence that you kind of had to have as a fighter and to be a champion in it, I think you always have to watch someone go, yeah, they're good, but I think I can beat them. Because you're watching them, you can see what they're good at, and you're like, oh, I'll use that against them or do this, and that will beat them.
And it worked a few times.
It did. Just a couple.
Luckily. Mate, I want to go back a bit. So where did you go to high school?
McGregor State High School.
Oh, you're McGregor?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So how was that sort of stage in your life? What was in your life other than soccer? You met your wife there.
Yep, she was there.
How was school?
Well, she was there from grade 8 from the very beginning of high school, and we didn't really have anything to do with each other for a while. Like, we knew of each other, but we didn't really think anything much of each other until right at the end. But what was the question? What was I doing at the start?
What during those high school years, what were you doing? Like, I know you were playing soccer. Were you a good student?
Look, I was an average student. Yeah. I was never like someone to play up too much. Mm. I'd probably do a little bit of a stupid thing every now and again, but I was pretty good majority of the time. I didn't really like getting in trouble, and
Was that more Ben's job?
Yeah, would you Ben's, say? Ben's definitely the trouble one. Definitely school wise, I think he had a lot of probably conversations with our parents with Ben at school.
I could imagine that. He's just coming off a big win too, Ben, so congratulations.
Massive.
That was huge. Because they wrapped that kid. I hadn't seen that kid before. But, you know, listen to the commentary. They were wrapping him as the next big thing.
He was. He's done some pretty massive things. He's had some big fights that he's won. He's a pretty crafty boxer, I thought Joel Taylor was.
Mate, and Ben, mate, that sort of, it was like a looping hooky over the top left hand douche right on the chin and dropped him. And yeah, sixth round, it's hard to come back from a knockdown, isn't it? You know, you've got to work really hard. Mm. So,
definitely is. It was definitely a fight. I was like, why are you taking this fight, Ben?
Yeah.
Like, this guy's hard. He's the Australian champion for one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only a six-round fight, but that's even going to be harder to beat the guy.
Mate, insane.
Coming from Jeff. His first 10 fights, he fought 10 killers.
Nofel Ben-Rabah, Samuel Colomba, and everyone was going, why is he fighting these guys so early?
Ravance,
Manny Pacquiao.
Man, there's so many names. We were talking about it before the podcast. You know, early on, some of those first few people were legitimate Australian kings. Like, they were really good. Like, Ravance is there. I'd rate him highly. And Sam Colomban and Ben Rabah, who we were talking about before, that was a big fight early on.
Look, Ravance is there. He was a very good boxer. Like, he was just crafty. He wasn't like a big puncher or anything, but he could just box really well. Yeah. So to beat someone like that was quite hard, but I got him. I think the first one was a head clash. I fought him once.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Technical draw because of the head clash happened.
That was down the Gold Coast.
Yes.
Was that on Fox? Mm. I remember that fight too.
Mm. Yeah, so luckily, for some reason, it wasn't me with the big gash on my head this time. It was him. So at least that's the benefit of that story is that it wasn't me cutting the and stopping the fight.
Yeah, but like, you know, obviously we got into this by just talking about Ben, but mate, I remember as an amateur, like he was always up and down. He'd fight and then you wouldn't see him and then he's in and out. But he wasn't consistent like you, was he? Like, who's with his Ben, your brother.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, I think he went on a trip overseas with Shah and took Joe and Ben to New Caledonia. You went as well. Yeah. You were a kid. And wasn't Joe dancing all night long in his tracksuit?
I don't know, but might have been underage drinking too. just a little bit.
Bit of that going on.
It was a good time, yeah.
But no, he seems like he's knuckled down the last couple of years maybe.
Yeah, look, he does train hard when he knows he's got a fight, but that's the problem that Ben's gone through. He's had the name from under me and then he's been thrown to the wolves a little bit and he hasn't been able to win some of the fights that he's been pushed into.
Yeah.
But when he's had preparation, which he's had for the recent Joel Taylor fight, six rounder, he's got a mammoth effort.
And put a big performance against Nikita as well.
He did. That was a tough fight for him too, but I think he almost got him at the end of that one. That's why he wants a rematch with him. But Nikita's, I shouldn't say scared. Nikita is looking to go
strategic.
Further up. Yeah.
Strategic with his matchmaking, I'd say.
I should say he's scared just to try and get him to fight at Ben again.
Yeah, just say. Never let the truth get in the way of a good story, mate.
Exactly.
So, mate, again, you were a school teacher. Were you like grade 12 and you're thinking, suppose I better pass my exams or go into school teaching? Or when did that sort of idea come in your head about being a school teacher?
Look, that was straight away after school. I was like, well, I don't know what I want to do. Like after school, I was still young and not even 18 yet. And I'm like, well, I wanted to be a sports player or sports person for my life. And that's might not happen. So I guess the next best thing is playing sport with kids for a living. Yeah. That's what I was doing it after and before school care at Forest Lake. That was my job, part-time job. I was casual there. I was just going before and after school care, and I was like, well, this is fun, and if I have more structure and be able to do this as a teacher, I'll have heaps of fun.
Yeah, right. Similar pathway, Jacko. Yeah. You did similar.
I swerved a bit more than Jeff, but I definitely did. Yeah, I did the before and after school care, and then I did do a year of teaching, studying, but uni wasn't for me.
Oh,
it was
okay.
A bit too hard for my little brain. Too much.
Yeah, it is a bit.
So you passed all, you finished all your uni?
Yeah.
And then you actually started?
It took me 5 years because with the boxing stuff at the same time, going to the Olympics with boxing, I was just like, I can't. Going away all the time, I was like, I need to defer. I need to do 3 subjects a semester, I think, and then 2 1 semester to kind of finish it off because it was getting a bit too hectic.
So were you finding yourself studying when you were on overseas camps and things like that, or you just pushed it aside?
Yeah, that's why I cut it down because I was having to, I didn't want to study and stuff while I was overseas.
Yeah, because you were traveling a lot at those times with the whole team, weren't you? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. So, did you actually start full time as a teacher, or you were more like a part time teacher?
Yeah,
or?
I was part time. I was probably more. I got contracts with Pilara State School for a while, and Springwood State High School. I got like little contracts with there were 2-3 days a week.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time I was a relief teacher. So I'd just get paid for relief work.
So you just teach PE, or did you have something else?
I was all over the place. I was at primary school where I went to Pilara. I was a classroom teacher. I was never a PE teacher at the school, and I really enjoyed that, teaching the kids maths, English, science, whatever it was on the days, and
And then, so did you actually teach PE at all?
I did, but I was more a relief PE teacher.
Yes,
so
right.
So I don't think I ever really taught it properly.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever got the opportunity. Maybe I did at Springwood for maybe a term.
Yep.
I got to teach PE. But, yeah, it wasn't long.
Mate, so tell us how we went there. Obviously, your career's a big one. I'm sure you've got many stories. You went down to Stretton Boxing Club, went up with Glenn, and how long were you training before your first fight?
Look, it's a little bit of a blur back then, how long the exact time frames were, but I think it was about 8 months that I trained at Glenn's just in martial arts, self-defense.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I did probably about 8 months before I noticed Adam Partridge there.
Yeah.
He was boxing, and I was like, I like the look of what he's doing. Mm. That's when I was like,
Is that how it was? That Glenn wasn't really doing the boxing at that time?
Not really. He only had one guy, and that was Adam, that was doing the boxing. And he was, I think, a pro boxer at that stage. So I was like, and I was doing some rounds and sparring with Adam. And I was like, I think I'd be good at this. I'll give boxing a crack.
Was this after watching the Nationals or before? Well, like, had you already started at Stretton beforehand? Or
can you remember what year that Nationals was? If we can figure out what Nationals
might be
that
about
was.
2003.
Yeah, that would
have
been
guessing
before. That would have been before then.
Right.
So I would have gone to the Nationals before. I'm pretty sure I was training, though, for a little while in, like, that self-defense martial arts part. And then I started training for my first boxing fight, which is when all that happened, that's when Dad was like, well, if you're going to be training for this, you need to go look at who the best in the country are.
Yep.
And the Nationals are here this year, so let's go have a look. I'm pretty sure that's how it worked. So before I had my first boxing fight, I've gone to the national titles, watched them and gone, like every other guy thinks, and I think I could beat these guys.
And then the rest is history.
Which I couldn't, by the way.
Yeah.
Let's make that clear. I could not beat those guys at that stage.
It's funny how, people just think it is a fight. Why didn't you just smash him in the first round?
Yeah.
Did I see you in there, mate?
Yeah.
People have no idea, really, have they, until they actually get in and start sparring at least, before they can understand how deep this game is.
Yeah, if you're in those ropes and you've got someone in front of you that knows somewhat what they're doing and you don't, it is a hell. It is hell in there. Absolute hell.
Yeah, well, people even say 3 3-minute rounds, like for amateurs. That's a piece of piss. I play a full game of footy. I'm like, it's a long time, mate.
Yeah, it's a long time when you're the one doing stuff all the time. Yeah. And you got the stress of getting hit at the same time. It takes 100%. The energy away.
So how many fights? I heard, didn't you only have a few fights before you made the state team or went to state titles?
My first fight was in the Global League.
Yep.
For Alex Smith, I think, in the global stopped him, I think, in the second round. Then I went to the state titles. Was my first fight were at state titles. I had two fights there and one.
That's right. After three fights, you were the state champion, weren't you? So, yeah.
Elite.
Yeah.
That's crazy, eh?
Yeah.
Wow, that's massive.
That's massive.
So my fourth fight was at Nationals against David Biddle.
Oh, from South Australia.
Yes. And he beat me. So I was like, oh, okay. It's back all over training. Now. The dream isn't going to continue here.
Did you think it was over?
No, I didn't. I was like, because I fought him and I fought him pretty well.
Yeah.
Like it was a close fight. And I was like, I think I could beat this guy, especially watching him go on to then win the thing. I was like, I can be better than him.
So he was the champion at that time, right? Yeah.
Was that 64 back
64.
Then? Yeah. So that's the weight you went to the Olympics at as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Man, that's a while back. David Biddle was on that team when went for Olympic qualifiers.
David Biddle, when Jeff fought him, would have had he'd been boxing for years. He would have had 70, 80 fights by the in your like fourth fight or something.
Yeah, probably. Something like
it's
that.
And mad all the boys you would have fought then.
Yeah. It's mad that he didn't probably stop me back then. Really, I don't know how I survived it.
If you were coaching now, would you throw a kid in against the national champion after three fights?
Look, anyone, no, but I guess the will and determination and probably how fast I picked it up, I guess Glenn was like, I think you can beat any of these guys watching them.
That was a big part of your success as well, I believe. Like coming from you will be better. But Glenn's positivity, is that right? Is that how... Glenn's motivation behind you as well, and like making you believe. Obviously, you believed as well.
Yeah.
But Glenn's like, no, let's fucking do this. Like,
yeah. Look, Glenn is definitely a big reason to why I landed where I did, and I don't think if I went to any trainer, I think I was tossing up to go to your gym at one stage, but it just ended up. I was like, I'll just stay with Glenn and. His vision was like, let's just...
And you just bought into it?
Yeah, I was just like, let's do it.
Well, if you can see that happening, I'm with you. But it's true, like we said before, if people have said to me, oh, don't you wish... Because I think you've written in your book that you come to the gym and we did a bit. And I just think they've said, oh, don't you wish Jeff would have stayed, would have come to you? And I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I would have worked for Jeff. I don't know if we would have worked together like that. I've always been friendly with Jeff and everything's good, but him and Glenn worked together. Saying that, I don't know if Glenn would have worked for Damien Hooper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's relationships and there's more to it.
Yeah, 100%. Like when I went and saw you, it was a lot different to than what Glenn was teaching me, but it was like, he's a good trainer, but I don't know. I was the same as you. I just didn't feel
it.
And it was just like, okay, well, I'll just keep going with Glenn.
No, it's so good. It's amazing, really, the journey and the story of, well, you have now behind you. But Glenn wasn't super experienced in this world of boxing. He was starting with you too.
He was an amateur. He was an amateur in the boxing game, really. Yep. And I guess he's a very knowledgeable guy and knows a lot about the fight game, but he didn't know anything about that the boxing business, really, of how it kind of worked. And I guess we'll learn both learning together over the years.
So would you say Glenn backs himself all the time, doesn't he? I remember reading in the paper once, and I've told a few people, and they love it when I say this, but he wrote this little thing. He said, my number one saying is, bite off more than you can chew, then chew like mad.
Yes.
Pretty much that was what he went with your career too.
I've heard that so many times, and that's exactly what he's done with me, and just like, yep, let's
Is he that way with his business too?
He's
had good success, obviously, with his own business.
Yeah, he's had good success, I guess. I guess it's taking risks and just going for it.
Mm. Calculated, obviously. Just go with that.
So what was the feeling like, Jeff, after... Like, you've obviously had a really good run starting out in boxing and then you'd lost the Australian title. What was the regrouping after that like? And then, what was your success like in the amateurs after that, or your goal?
Look, it's hard to remember back then. I probably need my blue book to see what kind of went on after the national titles. But I can remember just getting back, getting a fight. I can't remember my first fight after Biddle.
I know you fought Todd Kidd a couple of times, didn't you?
I did,
So that was probably in that process sometime?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, he beat me the first time. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he beat you the first time at Golden Gloves Caboolture.
Yes, that's right.
Then you beat him the next time.
I can remember his jab so fast. never been in the ring with anyone. I guess it's inexperience for myself too, but he just jabbed my head off. I was like, holy, I could not see it coming. I couldn't work with it.
Wow. And then, so what was the next big? So that you lost a Biddle. None of us can remember what year that was, but the next year, obviously, you went through the process again, state championships, obviously
won that.
I'm pretty
sure it would have been 2008, I'm guessing.
Was it?
Because I started basically in 2008, so I would have gone to the 2008
Nationals.
Lost, and then 4 years later after that Nationals,
That was the Olympics, there's some gaps to fill there. But then I remember we were down in Adelaide. It was World Championship Trials. And Glenn was there, but I was in the corner with Glenn, holding your water and things like that. You fought Camille Bella, or would you have fought Ibby?
No, Ibby was 56. Yeah, it would have been Camille.
So Camille.
Yeah.
Did you beat him? I can't remember. To go to World Championships.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
And then you got there.
That was in Baku in World Championships.
That would have been your first international tournament.
No, I don't think it was my first, but it would have been close.
Early.
It would have been early.
What was that like when you first got your first international fight, or your first feeling of you're in the national squad, we're going to the other side of the world tomorrow?
It was cool because that's when I started getting all the Australian gear.
Yeah.
I was like, this is awesome, having this stuff, but I knew what the others were thinking, like I was thinking, like, how good is this to have these tracksuits so I can keep them?
Yeah.
I was like, I want to be the best in the world as well.
Yeah.
I want to beat these guys. I don't want to just go and get the tracksuits, get the gear, get a pat on the back, say, well done. I want to win them.
It's funny how even as a novice, really, look, people say you're a novice under 20 fights, really, don't they, as an amateur? But, mate, to still have that self-belief with 15 fights or whatever you had going internationally, boxing at world championships, that's huge, mate. And you didn't even know that world, really.
I didn't. And I guess that's why I was partnered with Glenn, because of his vision of going, I'll stick you into the state titles in your second fight. You're in the national titles in your fourth fight. Like, every fight, it was like a whirlwind of experience that I was getting all the time. It was like unheard of. So for me to go to world titles and with 20 or so fights, I was like, well,
just another step.
Yeah, it's just what I do, and hopefully I win these.
So let's move through to the big one as an amateur, 2012 Olympic Games. Obviously, you qualified the previous year or early that year in the Oceania Games. Would it have been then or China? Yeah, Oceania Games you would have won.
Yep.
Obviously, got through through to the next stage, got chosen for the Olympics. What was that like when you got your hand raised – I'm going to London. What was that like?
It was so good because you had to win so many fights in a row to get into that position. I think, I don't know how many it was. It was probably like 10 nearly fights, 8 fights.
Well, it starts at state level and then you got to win those. Then you got to win the national. Then you got to win the Oceania Games. Yeah. So
So it was probably like 10.
Yeah. Well, 10. You'd have 3 or 4 at each stage. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like a lot of fights that you had to win and knock over each person to get into that position to go, you were going to the London Olympic Games for Australia. It's like, oh my God, okay.
Was that like crazy?
Yeah, it was. It was like, I don't know, even though I'd already gone to Worlds, Olympics is like...
Everyone knows about it.
Everyone knows it, yeah. Even though Worlds is probably harder to win, Olympics is like epitome of Australian sport. It's like, if you go to the Olympics, you're one of the best.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to the Olympics for my weight division.
And you went further than any Australian had actually been since 1988 when Spike Chaney won the silver medal.
Yes.
You got the quarterfinals, I think.
Yes, I just missed out. I was going for the medal. I aimed for the gold.
Yep. But
unfortunately, didn't even get a medal. Missed out. I think like my technical rating of the London Olympics was 5th.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so four get a medal and... Fifth,
you miss out.
Is out.
Was he Ukrainian from memory? Yes. Yeah. Yep. She? What? Dennis Berenchik. Yeah, right.
Who?
Dennis Berenchik.
Did he go on and win or did he would have medaled, obviously? No, he came second. He comes second.
Yeah, he lost against Everton Dos Santos Lopez, I'm pretty sure.
Cuba.
Brazilian.
Oh, Brazilian.
Yeah.
There you go.
Who was the best amateur you fought against? Not best in the public, so best where you go, geez, this guy's got me.
It was probably either Lopez. Yeah. I fought him.
Tiafoe?
No.
The guy
that I was just talking about. Yeah. I fought him. He was very, very crafty, very good.
Yeah.
Like boxer style. Like he was just counted me like no tomorrow. But Todd Kidd would have been... definitely up there as probably the outstanding fighters that I've fought.
And especially at that, you were not super experienced at that stage, but that would have been a big lesson that, well, it sticks to you now.
He taught me a lot. He taught me how valuable that jab is because he snapped it so good. I was like, man, I cannot even see this guy's jab coming.
Yeah.
He was that fast. So I was like, I want to be like that. So I just used some of Todd Kidd's meld and gone, I've got to improve on this.
Well, it's true. We say to, Jack says it as well all the time, that the fights you lose, especially as an amateur, like you look at them deeply and how much I want to get better and how much you improve from those losses a lot more than those wins, I think, as an amateur.
100%. Yeah. You don't learn near as much with the wins because you're like, well, I won.
Yeah.
I move on. I can celebrate.
Yeah, yeah.
Winning. You don't... After you lose, you're like, why did I lose? What did he do in that ring that I couldn't beat?
So, mate, you had a good Olympics, even though you wanted to get a medal. It was successful for Australia, it was...
Yeah, well, there's 10 of us, I think 11 of us who went, and we didn't... None of us medaled, so it was disappointing in that fact, but... No one had medaled since 88, as you're saying, since I was born.
Yeah. Is that when you were born?
Yeah.
Me too.
Old bastard.
It's funny hearing someone say that
kid.
I'm old, yeah.
Mate, it's funny hearing you were born in 88. And oh, Jesus,
I just heard 80. Oh, Jesus.
Yes.
So after the Olympics, was it always... the plan to go professional no matter what the outcome of the Olympics, or was it get a medal then we'll move on?
I think it was get a medal and move on. I don't think it mattered what happened at the Olympics. It was like, it's another whole 4 years to wait.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I started late in my career anyway. I was like, well, I don't have the time.
Yeah.
If I want to be fighting in my peak years for boxing, I was like, I've got to go pro.
So, mate, your pro career, you had a couple of early fights. So, like, first three were a bit ones to get used to the pros, I should say.
Well, Jody Allen was my first, and he was a tough
journeyman
of a Kiwi bloke.
Yep.
And he was tough as nails. Mm. And I guess that's the lesson he taught me is how tough pros can be.
Because
I hit him with everything. I did stop him eventually, I think, in the second round.
Yeah.
But the amount of punches that I hit that guy with, I was like, yeah, these guys are bloody tough. Mm. Like, how that guy did not fall over the second shot I landed on him was beyond me.
Can you remember the turning professional? Can you remember... I suppose that you've just answered that. I was going to say, can you remember the difference when you got in the professional ring to the amateur ring? Was it mainly about how tough these guys are? This is a fight rather than a boxing match?
Yeah, definitely. Because you have smaller gloves on, much smaller gloves on than the amateurs. Well, it feels like it anyway. Yeah. So you feel the punches, you feel the shots so much more when you're in the pro gloves. Mm. And yeah, when a guy can just take those shots and... some of the best shots that you've got and just still keep standing is unbelievable.
Mm. Yeah. I remember we had Todd Kidd on, who we've just spoken about, and Todd said amateurs is skill versus will, and then the pros is will beat skill in the pros. And I'm like, just hearing you say that, like two experienced guys that have been in the game for a long time, I feel that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, like you could be the most skillful fighter, but if a guy wants to get to you and beat you and hit you, he will somehow.
And he's got 10 rounds, 12 rounds to do it, he's going to find you. Yeah, 100%.
Mm. So, okay, after the first few fights, you needed to step up, or you thought you needed to step up. Was it Ravan Cesaire your first step up from that lower level competition? Or was it
funny how you say it's a lower level competition. I didn't feel like it was that low.
Yeah, but if you look at the guy's records... Yeah.
Jody Allen, definitely.
It was a massive step up. So Ravan Cesaire was a massive step up from those guys.
Who was second? Torin Rofia, I think another New Zealand bloke who's still pretty good. But I guess my third fight was Ravan Cesaire as a pro, and that was a big step up.
Yeah. You fought on our show. I think you fought... Did you fight Jody Allen second? Or you think it was first?
Torin, I think I fought on your show.
I can't remember.
That was the first one where Hooper debuted, was it?
Yeah, Hatton came over and all those ones.
Hammond fought too.
Yep.
I just remember Hooper's guy he fought had runners on. That's all I can remember from that night.
Garth Murray,
yeah. He's a big unit too, actually.
So, I'm guessing Glenn's plan for you was get up to the top as quick as possible.
Yep.
Whereas most people go... let's take our time to get to the top, tick all the boxes, and then we might not get there anyway. Sometimes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess that was the great part of, I guess, Glenn and my...
the relationship.
Yeah, the relationship, how we got together is he just didn't really know, and he had full belief in what I could do, with what he could see, and he was like, I think you can beat these guys, and I'll put you in with whoever I can. Doesn't matter. Win or lose, I think you'll win.
Actually, when live on Fox Sports, I think you knocked out Samuel Columban.
That was fifth fight.
Who was the current Australian champion and good. And you just caught him flush.
Yeah. That's when you say there's a bit of luck in the sport as well. And I thought I was going to be going 10 hard rounds with Sam. Like, I know he's a good fighter. I've seen him in fights before, and... I was so focused and trained so hard for that fight. Mm. And I think, you know how you talk about getting in the zone for fights?
Mm.
I think for that fight, when I knew how important it was, I was 100% in the zone for that one. I was like, I just saw everything in slow-mo, basically, with what he was doing. And that's when he dipped to the side, and that's when that straight right came. And I was like, got him clean on the jaw and good night.
Have you ever had that? In other fights, have you ever had that clarity, like you felt like this is my time right now, or that was...
Look, that's probably the most standout fight for me to know that I can remember just feeling on
that. I can't be beaten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately Sam was the one in the ring against me that night.
The other guy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I could imagine, like, people would think you were like that for the Pacquiao fight, but how did you feel? Like, I know I'm skipping ahead of here, but with all those people, all those eyes on you, and you're fighting like a living legend and probably someone you looked up to when you first started, would have been so hard to get in that zone. Did you feel like you did in that Columban fight, or was it a bit manic, or?
No, I guess that was similar. like I knew the importance on that fight. That was what I'd trained for my whole career, was to be a world champion, with Glenn in my ear saying, you will be a world champion one day. I was like, this is my moment. This is, he's trusted that I would get to this stage and he thinks I'll win it. And that belief, I guess, was shared to me, and I had it myself, and I was like, I'm going to beat this guy. Like, he's so cocky before, even though he doesn't really act cocky, but just in his actions of just being so chilled, I think, when I was watching him, and just how he was so blasé about me, not really caring really who I was. I was like, oh, hey, like, nice, but like, he has no idea what I'm going to do to him on that day.
Just looking over you, kind of.
Yeah, just looking past me going, oh, he's just an easy $10 million payday for me coming to Australia, have a nice holiday, knock him over pretty comfortably, and then go home.
So when did you know you had... Let's... Jack, you jumped too far ahead, mate. What are you doing?
I know, but
mate?
I got excited.
That was
I
rubbish. We'll go to the Pacquiao fight, because that's what people want to probably hear about, to be honest. Who was the one before Pacquiao that sealed the Pacquiao fight? Who was the opponent before Pacquiao?
Was that the guy? Was that on the Parker undercard?
Yes,
it was
New Zealand.
Randall Bailey, or
no.
One before,
no,
one more.
It was like a German guy or something,
no,
wasn't he?
No.
Here we go.
Look at these testing the memory.
Oh God.
Blue book.
I've said this so many times too.
Blue book box rack. We should have come with today.
Yeah. I actually have.
Was it an American?
No, he was African, I'm pretty sure.
I remember a German guy, but he might have been before Randall Bailey even.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he was German. He was European.
Yeah.
I remember the German guy. That was at Chandler.
Rico Mueller.
Rico Mueller, yeah.
That's the one.
Then was it Randall?
Randall was probably next after that.
Was that a tough fight, Jeff? Randall Bailey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he hit me with a big shot.
He did too.
Yeah,
he
did. I remember.
Perforated my eardrum in that fight, so... Then that got me all on the wobble, had the wobble boot on.
That's what he was known for, the big punch.
Yep,
he was a puncher, wasn't he?
Yeah, and I was like, well, I'll just avoid these punches. Mm. But he got one. He got one eventually on
As
me.
As you said before. So, obviously, you had a... Did you have an eliminator, or was Dean Lonergan just working behind the scenes with Top Rank to try and get that Manny Pacquiao? Did you have an eliminator where you knew I've got Pacquiao next?
No. I think I was ranked number two.
Yep.
My best world ranking was number two before I got the shot.
Mm.
And then when Bob saw the fight in New Zealand on Parker's undercard.
That's right, yeah.
He was there and was like, I think I could put this guy against Pacquiao and see what we can do. And I think the government got involved, and just to get Pacquiao over here, is like, yep, okay, the fight's on.
Mate, people talk about the best Australian fight ever and the best Australian boxing moment. They talk about other fighters, and they mention it with every fight you see. It's the best. Mate, there's none better than Jeff Horn, Manny Pacquiao, and that was the greatest moment in Australian boxing history, definitely, 100%. I know there's a few other people won world titles, but Manny Pacquiao was a household name. He wasn't just a boxing world champion.
Yeah, the people that don't even box knew who he was. So, to me, it was the biggest as well.
But you agree?
I'm a bit of a favoritism to myself.
Yeah,
at this stage,
that's fair.
But I think there's definitely been some massive fights in the past with other fighters that we have, like Jeff Fennec and such. So
yeah, the whole card was like Hooper won against that Umar Solomov, and then Dave Toussaint beat Shane Mosley Jr.
Yep.
And then I feel like there was another upset.
Michael Conlon fought on that card too.
Yeah, he fought
Juarez
Jared
from Fortitude.
Yeah. It was a good card, and then just to lead into that last moment,
mate,
when you came out.
If Jeff hadn't have won, that was still a massive day in Australian boxing.
Yeah.
If Jeff had just gone in there, and he was still a legend, but to beat him, I remember I was set, because myself and Chris McCullum were in and around. I was about, I was probably 5 metres from the corner of the ring. It was the end of the seventh, and I just went to Chrissy. I went, he's going to fucking win this. We were just like, holy shit, how is this happening?
It's exactly what was going through probably our heads.
Yeah,
we believed that it was going to happen, but it was like, holy crap, closer. We're winning this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was like fighting him. I'm like, it's working. Like, what I've been training to do is actually working on the guy. I'm like, I definitely believe that I'm going to win this now. I feel like I'm in front. Every time I'm going back to the corner, Glenn and that were going, you won that round.
Yeah.
I think you won that round. I was like,
that's one, yeah, two, I felt three, like I won four. The round.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then round nine. You love it, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a shaky round. That was when I think he saw blood and was like, oh, I think I can get him here.
He didn't drop you though, did he?
No.
No.
No. Well, I guess he threw a punch which knocked me down to the ground, but it was like
not classes
a push.
Knocked
no.
Him.
It was like a trip. But yeah, well, he had me running that round, that's for sure. Had me buzzing and going, oh, what have I been training all this time, all these years for this moment? That was kind of going through my head and going, I need to hold on here.
Mate, let's, even though it's still a Pacquiao fight, let's talk about fight week leading up, if you can remember it, because it would have been a crazy buzz in your head. To be honest, people on the outside like me probably saw more of it than you did, because you were probably just making weight. Obviously, you had press to do and everything.
Yeah.
What was that like when you knew all the hotels were packed? Did you think about that sort of stuff?
I didn't even know, because I was at home.
Just sticking your own, in your own head?
In my own bubble, living out of my home in Acacia Ridge and waking up fight morning going, okay, well, it's time to drive to go to the Suncorp Stadium, not to watch a Broncos game or anything, but to go fight Manny Pacquiao.
50,000 people.
Yeah.
And look, mate, to be honest, now your name... Since then, your name has sold out stadiums, right? That night, I'm sure if you're honest, Manny Pacquiao brought that crowd to fight Jeff Horn, obviously, you know.
I know I'm not the one that packed out 52,000 people in that stadium. It was Manny Pacquiao.
But from what you did, then you took that ledger on and then you could pack out stadiums yourself, mate. Yeah. That was, mate, craziest, well... To say a guy with 15 or 16 professional, you'd only had like 15 fights, hadn't you?
I think he was my 17th.
17th fight. He's going to beat Manny Pacquiao, who just won world titles from flyweight all the way up to welterweight. And this kid from Acacia Ridge is going to beat him. Mate, madness.
Yeah, there's not many bigger moments I can think of that have happened in Australian sport. But, yeah, and it's such a moment for so many people because... Like, I can remember where I was. I can remember the feeling. Gareth can remember saying to Chris McCullen what he said. And and obviously for you, that would be times a million.
Yeah. Well, I can remember. I'm not very good at remembering what I was doing.
Due to many punches.
Probably from a couple of punches. But the feeling, like that elation of completing that life goal of... I wanted to always, as a kid, be a professional...
athlete,
but then and then to be the best at it and to get that finally that moment and that announced, I was just like, oh my god, I remember that. And still, oh, and you, sorry,
do you get goosebumps? Like,
yeah,
does it make
I do
you feel funny?
Still always when I watch a video we play it at schools that we go to and every time it happens I don't
get
sick
choked
of
up a bit. Wow, mate. So when you were in the dressing room, what was that like, getting your hand... Because they played a couple of games with you, didn't they? They made you wrap up, and then I think Freddie Roach made you unwrap because the tape was the wrong colour or something. I think I had to throw Glenn a few white rolls of tape off. Something like that.
Yeah, we were using brown tape, and he's like, oh, that's what you use on your feet and things. He's like, you don't use
just
that...
Just picking at anything.
Yeah, he's like, you don't use that on your hands. Like, it's not boxing tape for your hands, and... Yeah, we had to get tape.
So the commission made you turn it off.
Yeah,
take
which is
it off.
Ridiculous. It's the exact same tape, just a different colour, really.
Yeah, just trying to play all those tricks.
And then I had to, luckily, I was born with that patience and like, whatever.
Who cares?
You don't want me to have this tape? Well, find me other tape and I'll change it. Put the other tape on and punch him in the head with it.
Oh, excellent. What was it like in the dressing room?
Look, I was calm. I don't think I've probably felt that everyone was calm. Like, there was definitely nerves in there. But I was just... I'd done the training. I'd done the work. I'd done everything Glenn had told me to do. And I felt comfortable in myself that I was ready to go to war for those 12 rounds. So I was, I guess, comfortable sitting there waiting for my moment.
So Were your family in the dressing room, or you kept them out of it?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember who was in that dressing room or not.
But you were in your headspace.
Yeah, I was just relaxing. I can remember turning up to the venue.
Can you remember walking out?
Yes, I remember walking out. I can remember just seeing a sea of people and cheering and stuff, walking through the crowd to get to the ring. I can remember that and just going, it's happened.
Jesus, here we go.
But I probably wasn't really thinking that. I was focused.
Yeah, you knew that was happening, but I knew you were still thinking about the fight. Yeah,
I knew it was there, but I was like, as soon as I go out of the tunnel, like the footy players probably do.
Yeah.
As soon as I walked out into that stadium area, I was like, this is it. I'm switched on. Sure, there was people cheering me on, and I'm like, yep, I'm going for this. And then I guess I switched into another mind frame as soon as I stepped through the ropes.
Yep.
As soon as I go through the ropes, then I was like,
that's it.
Robot mode. I've got no feeling.
Do you remember your first exchange with him?
Nah.
Do you remember any his speed or his power?
I can remember him being quick.
Quick, yeah.
And explosive.
Mm-hmm.
But not really.
Nothing that stuck out.
Nothing that stuck out, because I was like, I was doing it against him. I was exploding at him and smothering.
And just punching.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a moment early on, and I'm not saying that I saw it either, but you had in the fight, you didn't have a moment that was thinking, shit, I've bitten off more than I can chew.
No.
You were like, I've got this.
Yeah.
Kept chewing.
Yeah.
Chew like mad.
Yeah. Every round after the first round, I was like, oh, I won that round. Was expecting more really from Pacquiao than what he gave. And then I was like, did it again. So after each round, I was getting more and more confident going, I think I'm winning this fight, and I think I could beat him.
Mm.
And the atmosphere would have just gone with that feeling as well, because everyone would have been thinking exactly the same thing.
Yeah, everyone's cheering, going, holy crap.
Fuck, he won that round. He won it.
I remember a few weeks later, I saw Jeff. It was when we had an amateur tournament, or it might have been a couple of months later. We had an amateur tournament on, and one of Glenn's guys was boxing on it. And Oz Boxing did this thing, who's going to win, right? And they asked me, and I said, man, I really hope it's Jeff. I just don't know if he can beat Manny Pacquiao, though. And Jeff said to me,
this is random.
Yeah. Jeff said to me, gee, you didn't think I was going to win that. And I went, mate, it's Manny Pacquiao. I was hoping you did. But that moment when you probably won't remember that conversation, but I remember you saying to me,
This goes back to the start of when I was about to box.
Yeah,
it was like
similar. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't think you were ready yet.
Even though I had done what I'd done to that step, you're probably still like, he's still not ready for this.
Still not ready. I'm like, this is crazy. Obviously, that's where me and Glenn, I'll probably hold on to you a bit more. We're going to let you go a bit earlier.
Yeah.
But like I said, it worked for you.
It did. And I guess 99% of people, that wouldn't work.
Probably. Exactly. Yeah. It wouldn't.
But for me, somehow it did that day.
And I just remember writing this thing, I'm thinking, mate, of course I want Jeff to win. And I'm saying, yes, of course, I do want him to win. I just think Manny Pacquiao has got a little too much experience at this stage. Holy shit, but I was the first one jumping up and down. What the fuck? I'll tell you what, you also gave my father, you wouldn't even know this, but you gave my dad his biggest moment in boxing as well, because he was an official and he was standing over your corner. The official had to stand in. He was the one making sure that nothing untoward was happening in the corner. He was doing your corner that night. So it was a big occasion mate, everyone in Queensland. It was like, because so many people will probably look back at that day as one of the greatest days in their sporting life, I'd say. Is it you as well, Jack?
100%. Yeah, I remember watching it. But I was at home watching it, because I was like, no one's going to fucking ruin this moment for me being out in the crowd. I'm just sitting there watching it. No extra noise. And my mum doesn't even get into boxing, and she was off the couch screaming at the TV.
Wow.
I can settle down. I'm trying to watch.
But I'm sure you hear those stories from a lot of people. But
I never get sick of them, though.
Mate.
It's when you do something like that, it's like, it's cool to hear all the stories from many different people who go, where were you that day? What were you doing? What were your feelings towards it? It will never, I don't think I'll ever get sick of it.
No. But you know what the best thing about you is, to me, you're still Jeff Horner, the guy who was 17 years old, having his, or 18 or however old you were, having your first. To me, you've never approached anybody that I know or anyone in our gym any differently to who you are.
Yeah.
And that's a credit to yourself and your family for, I suppose, for raising you and you continuing that as you've got older. You've never been above the sport or above the game, and yeah, you've always been that same guy, which is a real credit to you, mate.
Thank you. That means a lot.
And, mate, legend? Can you say it?
Of course you can. Yeah. Well, we can say it as fans, for sure.
All right, mate. Fight was over, and the new. Yeah, you've celebrated. What was that? Can you remember that walk back from there, from the ring to the dressing room?
Not really. I think it was a lot of photos, a lot of hitting hands with people I didn't know.
And just go, what the fuck have I just done? Yeah. What have I just done?
Yeah, I'm going, I've done it. I'm world champion, but I don't know. I didn't picture what, like, that was the goal, right?
Yeah.
So I didn't have the goal of unifying the division or anything like that, or going up in weight and fighting for another world title. That was it. That was my moment that I achieved exactly what I wanted out of the sport already, which was a mistake going forward, because you need to have the higher goal to then achieve more things.
Yeah. Like somebody like Canelo Alvarez keeps achieving. You go, how the fuck do you get motivated for another one?
Yeah, exactly. Because he's obviously, as a young kid, he's gone, I'm going to be a unified champion. I'm going to be multiple weight division champion. So he's probably thought that from a young age, because he's known boxing all his life. So he's probably thinking, I'm going to do that. So it's exactly what he's doing.
Did you have a moment after the fight, obviously after the fight, where you went, my life has changed forever?
I didn't realize, like I did. I realized soon after the fight. I don't know how long it took.
When the money went in your bank, maybe?
No.
Wasn't that?
It wasn't the money, because I'm never... That's why I guess money hasn't changed me as a person either. Like it doesn't change.
It's numbers.
It's just numbers in a bank account or an investment that you might have or whatever. It didn't matter. What I noticed, which was the hardest thing to transition life at that point, was the fame, which I understand. I can understand A-list celebrities and how they must feel just living normal life, because they cannot get away from people. And I felt like that. I couldn't, straight after the Pacquiao fight, I was hot property at that point. And I was probably elevated to that celebrity status for a little while.
Mm.
And I just felt like I couldn't go anywhere or do anything without someone knowing who I was and wanting to get a handshake or a photo.
Yeah.
As much as I would give my time to do it, it just changed me being able to go out in life and enjoy it. Just being me, just normal me. Just a normal person.
Let's go to the shop. Well, we can't.
I couldn't do that, because I'd have lines of people wanting to get photos and autographs and things. I was just like, and I would do it. I'm too nice not to do it. I'm like,
yeah, I couldn't imagine you saying no to someone. That's the thing, yeah.
And then that what made it so taxing after a while was just like, let's just go away. And I can remember going to O'Reilly's, I think, for a getaway, for a holiday for a while, and even going for a bushwalk. We came across no people, really, and then the one group of people, or a couple of people that we walked past, knew exactly who I was, and I was like, hey. I was like, I cannot escape this in a rainforest even.
I thought he was going to say a kangaroo, ask for a photo. Yeah, right. And how did Joe deal with it?
Look, I guess she had to deal with it like exactly I had to deal with it. Like, it was, she
knew to her
back,
too.
Patient.
Yeah.
Had to be patient, because you're like, there's a line of people.
I remember reading something. You were saying that, like, you could, or no, maybe you said this to me, you can deal with the negative publicity, people talking shit on social.
Yep.
But you hated it when they were attacking your family.
Yes.
What was that moment like? What was that like? That's terrible, mate.
Yeah. Look, I had it through my whole career, people saying I couldn't do stuff or I was crap or whatever. I couldn't care less what they thought. I was just like,
that's
just
why keep, you got so far.
Yeah, I'll just keep achieving the goals that they think I'm not going to get because I believe in myself.
Yeah. And
that's all I need. I just need my close supporters, my family, my trainer and things like that to be on my side. And that's all that mattered to me. I knew people weren't going to believe. Like, it was hard to believe.
But were people actually messaging her and having a go at you through her because, like, trying to hurt somebody because they knew you weren't hurting?
Some people just throw crap everywhere just to try and make it stick. So that's the part that hurt me the most was when they attacked family members. Joe, she was getting attacked a fair bit, get called overweight, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff that females hate.
Yeah.
And I knew she would be hating that type of stuff. Mm. And I was just like, this is horrible. Like, I hate this. I hate that about people in general, just attacking someone that has nothing to do with it. Like, I'm the person that did it.
Mm.
Attack me as much as you want because I don't care.
Yeah, I can
deal with it. Don't attack the people that are along my side.
Mm.
Just not have nothing really to do with it.
That's the worst. People online think, like, they throw their opinions and... Imagine if you did it to their mums or their sisters. Oh. Like, they would hate it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, Jeff, did you ever have any bitterness towards the Pacquiao fight as well with the decision? And, you know, a lot of the American public didn't really buy into you winning.
Yeah.
Which, like, obviously we all thought you won. But did you have any bitterness towards that or anger?
I guess that's just kind of how I am, though. Like, I was like, I am myself going through that fight and... majority of people that watch it go, yep, Jeff won that fight. I felt like I'd won the fight. So that feeling in myself of going, I definitely won. That's all I need in myself to go, doesn't matter what everyone else thinks. It's how I feel and the result stands. And they've even gone back to rescore the damn fight to go, they don't think he won it, so they rescored it, and I win it again. So.
Half the public don't even watch the fight, and then they just jump on what everyone else is saying anyway.
Yeah.
Just fucking idiots, man.
Mate, no matter how many times I've watched that fight, there's no way Jeff could lost that fight. He won 100%.
Yeah. I've watched it a few times. I had it like 8-4 from memory to you.
Yeah.
And like, I like to think I'm watching it back. You know, the first time I probably had it a bit wider because I'm cheering for you.
Yeah.
And I'm watching everything you're doing and not him as much. But then
you rewatch it. I've done the same as you. Yeah. And you go, how can they not give me that round?
100%.
How can someone watch that and go, he didn't win that round?
100%.
That's exactly how I watch it. I'm like, don't know how they think I lost because majority of the rounds... like it was scored, I win.
But like you said, in your heart, you know you won, so you probably,
yeah, so it doesn't really matter. I guess some people can't do that and can't compartmentalize that that and go, well, these people are saying I didn't do it, so I feel like maybe I didn't do it. Yeah. I don't question that at all. I go, I won, and that's all I need to know.
Pretty much it was people on the payroll of... working for the TV or working for Top Rank or whoever they were working for. They were on some sort of payroll that started creating this bullshit news that you didn't win the fight, Teddy Atlas, and everyone started buying into it. Well, mate, people that were there, they all know. They all know who won that fight, and I think most 90% of people do anyway.
That your welterweight division back then too, Jeff, it was stacked, man. Like, there were so many good champions there and people who were on the rise. Like, you got Errol Spence and then obviously Crawford and like even back then Andre Berto and a few names, Danny Garcia, they were all around too. Were any of those potential fights after Pacquiao or it was?
I don't think so. Because I was under contract with Bob Arum, he had the 2-fight deal straight after the Pacquiao fight. I didn't have control of who was fighting.
So they just say, look, we've got you, because you fought Gary Cochran in Brisbane. And then
even though our team, they allowed us to go, well, you can choose your defense. And that was the fight. And then the next fight, like, you're fighting Crawford.
How was that? How was Cochran? Was it?
He was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was so tough, man. Yeah. And he did a lot of... mental stuff with you too. Did he talk a bit? Was that?
Look, he
was at a convention center.
Yeah.
Because Rowan Murdoch fought on that fight night as well.
Yeah. Were you there?
Yes, I was. Yeah. That was a good fight.
He was a tough fight, and I guess exactly what we wanted to do. We didn't want to do the normal thing and take an easy fight, which is what kind of you expect kind of a champion
first
to go.
First defense, like, yeah.
Just do an easier
just
one.
Just hold the belt for a while.
Hold the belt. And, yeah. We're like, no, we'll fight a hard guy. The hardest we could nearly get is Corcoran that fast after the fight.
But how is your head? You've got up so high for Manny Pacquiao, like you said, achieved your goal.
Yeah.
You didn't think about the next step. How was it coming around to fight this guy that, let's be honest, he might have been good, but no one knew who he was.
Yeah.
What was your mentality like?
I knew I wanted to, I guess, keep my world title belt.
Right.
And I guess fighting someone like Gary, I was like, well, I think he's good. He's tough.
Hmm.
But I don't think he's got the skill level that I had,
yep.
And the will to win. He might have had the will to win as much as I did, but I felt like I was a better boxer than he was, and I could outbox him in that fight.
But was it hard getting up for it after Manny Pacquiao? Getting up for Manny Pacquiao, was it hard, or were you motivated again?
Look, I was probably motivated again because I knew I was probably guaranteed another big sum of money to come in, and
Yeah.
I guess that started to become
the reality.
I'm going to keep the world title now. I'm like, now I've got a new goal. I'll try and get all the belts.
Yep.
But the goal really became, okay, so how much, like, this is another money fight. If I can keep getting big fights like this is $1 million paydays.
I'm going to set the family up.
Yeah. Set me and the family up for life.
Yeah, nice. And now it's all about poker.
Now it's poker dream up.
Now it's losing all his money in playing cards.
Well, it's not all about poker. Poker's the fun I have on occasion. Normally once a week I play a game of poker. But the main thing is now is trying to help out what I guess happened to me with the bullying at school and trying to change the lives of kids out there and teach them that you can be a champion.
Let's go into that, mate, because we also run a school program. It's similar outcomes, different set of kids, I think. Yours is more the probably more the victims or people that may be getting bullied.
Anyone, I guess. Yeah. I think it's a problem if you teach them how to diffuse like conflict in a conflict situation, it normally makes you a better human and achieve your goals more easier in life if you're better at doing that. So boxing, I guess, if it comes to the situation where it becomes physical and you can look after yourself, normally your outcomes and are better.
Yeah, that's right. So we work with a lot of kids that their class is disengaged youth, and things might not be going, you know, streamlined as perfect as we would like to do in their lives, but it can be anything. You know, they can have any dramas, like self-belief dramas, which obviously you'll get a lot of kids with low self-esteem as well.
Yeah.
But it's helping them. I think it's a bit mainly about helping them believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And like yourself, finding conflict resolution, however it may be, walk away.
Yeah.
Back yourself, carry yourself a bit taller anyway.
Yeah. Giving them the tools to feel more confident in that situation where someone's picking on them, either physically or mentally, and being able to go, well, we've given you the belief and the confidence by doing these things that you never thought you were going to be able to do, never thought you would even have the knowledge of being able to be able to handle yourself in this way, and pushes them up and gets results.
And that's what it's all about now. We did a podcast last week, didn't we, Jacko? And we were talking about, well, life nowadays is about giving back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've got to teach the next generation, like you're doing now as well, like how to live a good life, and then hopefully they can pass it on too.
Yeah. Like, I guess, thankful to my family bringing me up, and I knew I wanted to get a loving wife and have kids and just live a simple life, go to work every day and support my family. That was the goals and that's the dream if that would happen. But a lot of people don't have that and they have broken families or they don't have good people to look up to, and yeah, just things can happen, and it's kind of unlucky for them, and just trying to give them a purpose in life, and trying to teach them how to, push through.
Well, that's what it's about, eh, Jacko?
Yeah, 100%. And just respecting others and respecting yourself as well. I think it's a massive thing.
It is.
Yeah, but like you said, like having good role models and people to look up to is such a big thing now as well. I think a lot of kids don't have someone to strive to be like, or someone telling them, look, that's not the right thing to do. Come to the gym or come do this. And, you know, we've obviously had people like that in our lives.
Yeah, or they're getting the media of, sometimes unfortunately, NRL or something that point out some things that we really don't want our kids to see what these footy players are doing, and like, we don't want our kids to look up to people that are doing this type of thing.
That's right. Like, they're in the media for a negative thing, but they can brush it aside and their sport continues or their life continues. We were talking about this earlier, Jack. You explain what you were talking about. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, well, they see behaviour and then they think, well, oh, that's okay for me to do and I'm still going to play NRL.
Yeah.
Or I had a young fella talk to me and he goes, and I was talking to him about, you know, getting away from smoking and smoking weed and stuff as well, because it's not going to help him if he wants to be a fighter. This kid wants to be a fighter.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, yeah, but Nate Diaz smokes weed and this person smokes weed. I said, yeah, mate, but Nate Diaz runs triathlons and he fought Conor McGregor and he's been a dedicated fighter his whole life. He probably does it now. He's semi-retired. But you seeing that and you think he can do it at the same time, that's not going to happen for you, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad when they can get the images of the person that has done really well, but then they go, oh, hold on, he's doing this at the same time. It's like, no, he's probably not doing it at the same time. He's doing it now probably because he can. Yeah. He's probably earned a lot of money from what he's done and the dedication he's had in the past. It's enabled him to do it, but yeah.
Yeah, they hold on to those things that are sometimes not the right things to hold on to.
Well, moving forward, well, Crawford was obviously the next fight after that. We saw a lot of games being played, would you like to say, with that fight?
Yeah.
When you were over there, obviously?
Yeah, like even before, like I got offered, I think, $3 million to start with to get that fight, even though I was only contracted. US? Yeah.
Ooh.
Only, nice. I was only contracted to get paid $750, but I was like, he kind of weren't really expecting to fight a unified champion on the division below.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like, will you pay us more for that? And he was like, well, that's when the three mil came out. But then he was like, actually, I don't have to do this. And he dropped it down. I think we got 1.5 maybe to fight him, something like that.
The games. I just said to you before, like watching the TV, watching you walk out of the tunnel, I don't know, but your head, again, it's only looks, but your headspace to me looked, you didn't look as comfortable or as calm in your own mind, but like you just said, there was so much bullshit going on in the lead up.
Yeah.
Hotel rooms or whatever it was.
The hotel was still good, but like I knew he was getting looked after better.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think he was in the same hotel, but he was like you get put in the middle floors where they put on
in the penthouse
or whatever. It's just like, like this is the promoter just looking after the other guy a lot better than you. Then the weigh-in comes and you weigh in fine on your scales. You've checked your scales with the official scales to go, yep, made sure I know I've calibrated my scales basically to theirs to know the difference.
Yep.
If I wake up in the morning and do this on these scales, I should be fine. Did that. And then when it comes to official weighing day, I'm 200 grams or 300 grams over. I'm like, that can't be right. Like, I stepped on these scales earlier and I was fine.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, dodge it up there somehow.
The games and the away team.
Yeah.
Even though you were the world champion at that time.
Yeah, but he was as well, I guess. That's
true.
He's fighting another world champion.
Well, he still is. He's still got that belt, doesn't he?
Yep.
How do you think, I know we spoke about it before, but how would you think that Crawford-Spence fight plays out, Jeff?
Look, as I said before, I think Crawford wins. I think he's a better fighter than Spence. Sure, Spence has got power, probably maybe a little bit more power than Crawford, but it's being able to hit the guy. And Crawford's a better boxer, so I think he moves, he's crafty. He'll make Spence walk into his shots more than he's going to walk into Spence's.
Does the best Manny Pacquiao beat the best Crawford?
Oh, that's a tough one.
Only you can say that. We can't.
Yeah, because it's a different weight division as well. Mm. I don't know.
Don't know.
That's a really, really hard question because who knows how they match up the styles because Crawford's two southpaws.
Could be an ugly
fight. Well, he's a switcher. Crawford's a switcher. Yeah. Mm. And he's more of a boxer counter fighter style. Well, Pacquiao, is he good against that style? I'm not really sure if he is. But he was just explosive and fast. I don't know.
With all those names, Jeff, were you confident back then that you would beat any of them on your given day?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like your Kell Brooks, Danny Garcia's, all of them, you were comfortable?
100%. I was like, no matter who you put me with, I'll beat them. Like, that's the confidence level you had to have, I guess, to get to where I did, is to go, it doesn't matter what these guys can do, I can do it better than they can.
Mate, getting a bit of advice for young guys coming through, like myself. No, from obviously somebody that's been there and done it at the elite, the top level in the amateur game and the professional game. What advice could you give to young people that, you know, sometimes some people are a bit scared of succeeding. They don't want to jump in balls deep, you know. What advice could you give to young fighters that really want to go for it, or young people?
Look, I guess, what do they want in their life, I guess? What's their golden life? Do they want to be rich and famous? Do they just want to be, I don't know. Like, it's all to come down to what you want. And most people want to have a lot of money and a lot of fame and those type of things. It's like, well, it takes a lot of hard work and to get to that position. So first you got to believe in yourself and you're going to have a lot of people that come around and say, you can't do that. Or for one, they're going to push you down.
Yeah.
Or tell you can't do it for one reason or another. So don't listen to those people and then constantly have that belief in yourself that you will get to that goal no matter what. You've got to sacrifice a lot of things to get there, but sacrifice whatever you need to get to it.
Saying that, what was your goal? Was it be the world champion or was it to beat Manny Pacquiao?
It was to become world champion.
Yeah. Whoever it was, didn't matter.
Didn't matter if it was Manny Pacquiao. It was good that it was. I was able to fight one of the best for the belt, but I never had any.
Didn't matter who it was, they were going to get beaten.
Yep.
Self-belief 100% for Jeff Horn. Mate, I think that's been excellent, Jack.
100%.
Time to wrap it up with Jeffrey.
Time to wrap it up, but I just want to say thanks for coming in, Jeff, and, you know, inspiring. How many people, I don't know, whether it's 10 people listen to it or 100 people, you're going to inspire them just like you have all of us that have come up under you, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Jack.
Because I remember you watching you when you're an amateur and then all the way to what you did, and then you've paved a way for all of us young boxers to come through and hopefully carve out a legacy, but also make a little bit of money as well along the way.
Mate, it's my absolute pleasure, and I'll keep inspiring whoever I can because I felt like I was a nobody. I was a nobody before I became world champion, so I feel like I'm still the same guy I always was. So if I can inspire a little old me out there or someone else, that just to do the best you can and become a champion.
Mm. Thank you, mate.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. It's been a pleasure. And like I said, you haven't changed a bit since day one when I met you. And, mate, it's been a pleasure to be part of the ride as far as a mate or, being around you and your camp for so long. So thank you very much, mate.
Thanks, Garrett.
Legend. Cheers, buddy. Thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you.